Morning. Today's daf in Erevin Chaf Ches. We are in Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're at the second wide line. Our Gemara is going to start off, second narrow line before the lines start getting wide. But Mike Mifilgi, the Gemara is going to continue its discussion from yesterday. Yesterday we started the third parak of Maseches Erevin, in which we started a discussion of Eruvit Chumim. And that means to say that if a person wants to move his Makom Shvisa, his point of center, so that he could shift over the area in which he could walk on Shabbos and the limits of where he could walk on Shabbos. So he is going to set up an Erev Tchum. We're going to be discussing in great detail over the course of this parak exactly how to set it up. But right now our first discussion is going to be what food can a person use in order to set up his Erev Tchum? And the answer is basically any food. Any type of food would be acceptable to set up his Erev Tchum. The Mishnah put the limits down to just simply water and or salt. What about water and salt? I take back the conjunction of and. Water and salt, so that was a bit of a discussion yesterday. But either water or salt, neither of those are considered significant foods. They're not nourishing, and so therefore they cannot be used for an Erev Tchum. We had a number of discussions yesterday in the first half of the third parak of Erevin. We talked about when the Mishnah gives us a generality, a klal, does that mean that's going to be covering everything? Rav Yochanan says it does not mean it's going to be covering everything. Even when the Mishnah says these are exceptions, that doesn't mean that everything else is included in the generality. So that was one discussion that we had yesterday. Included in that also a couple of other discussions. But we turned our attention yesterday to Maaser Sheni. How is Maaser Sheni connected to Eruvei Tchumim? The answer is food. Because as we learned in yesterday's Mishnah, the foods that qualify for Eruv Tchum seemingly are the same foods that are going to be qualifying for what one could purchase with this Maaser Sheni money. Maaser Sheni money, that means to say that in the farm, in the field, when he's collecting his produce, setting aside his truma, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. So the Maaser Sheni produce has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. That is an inconvenience. The Torah recognizes it's an inconvenience. So therefore, what one could do is one could take the Kedusha of that Maaser Sheni, transfer it over to money, bring the money to Yerushalayim the next time he's in Yerushalayim, purchase with that food, and what food can one purchase? So again, seemingly all foods, same foods that one could use for his Erev Tchum. The Mishnah made those 2 points. And so yesterday we talked about this idea of purchasing whatever foods you want with the Maaser Sheni money. In a moment, we're going to go back to the Psukim and we're going to see the Psukim inside. Gemara yesterday, if you go back to Chav Zayin Amud Aleph on the bottom, so we had a brisa that we quoted, Eidus that was given by Rabbi Yehuda ben Gedish in front of Rabbi Eliezer. And he was saying that how he remembers that his father with his Maaser Sheni money would go ahead and purchase the brine of fish. So that means to say the schmaltz, the fat that comes out of the fish. So he would go ahead and we'd purchase that with his Maaser Sheni money. And the response was, maybe we're talking about the actual fish itself that he purchased. It wasn't just the schmaltz, it was fish. So we saw yesterday, and then the Gemara related that to the discussion of water and salt, and go back to yesterday's daf. Anyway, it became clear in yesterday's discussion that the limits of what food one could purchase with his Maaser Sheni money would be fish. One could purchase fish with his Maaser Sheni money. And the discussion now will ensue in the Gemara in terms of whether or not everyone is in agreement with this idea that I could purchase fish with my Maaser Sheni money. What does the Torah have to say about this? Actually, the Torah is pretty clear. We go to the Pesukim in Chumash. This is all just by way of introduction, just to get ourselves grounded for the daf. And the Torah in Parshas Re'eh, we just read it a number of weeks ago, goes through exactly what one could purchase with Kesef Maaser Sheni. Aser Tasir is called Tvoz Derecha Yotzei HaSadeh Shana Shana. So this happens to be also what we lane on every Yontif. On the Acheron Shal every Yontif, we lane the Parsha of Re, the section of Re. Sometimes we start from Aser to Aser, sometimes we don't. Anyway, so V'achaltof Neshem Elkecha B'makom Asher Yivchad L'Shakein Shmo Sham. If you want to follow together with me, we are in Devarim Perik Yedalid. I'm already up to Pasuk Chav Gimel. So, Ma'asad Yigan Chati Yorosh Chavit Zerecha V'chorosh Bekar Chavit Zonecha L'man Tilmad Li'iraz L'Shem Elkecha Kol HaYamim. Okay, sorry, didn't have to start that early. But basically, The Torah wants us in Yerushalayim as often as possible. We're going to learn Yiras Hashem when we're in Yerushalayim. And that's the purpose, one of the purposes of Aliyah L'Regel. And the pasuk goes on. Now we're up to pasuk Chav Dalet. V'chiyir ben mimcha haderek yelo suchal seiso, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom asher yivchar, Hashem lekecha lasum shemot sham. So let's say it happens to be, I'm sorry, ki yivrechecha Hashem lekecha. So it happens to be that Yerushalayim is too far away. Parenthetical note, by the way, interesting parenthetical note, is that the Torah itself never describes the Beis HaMikdash to be built in Yerushalayim. It always describes it as Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elkecha. So the place that Hashem will decide and will determine. Okay, and why that is not for now, but certainly we all need to be sensitive to that point. V'nasata b'kasev v'tzarta kesev yadecha. So what you're going to do now is you're going to take the Kedusha of the Ma'aser Sheni and you can convert it to money. And then what you'll do is you'll wrap up the money. And you go to Yerushalayim. And here we go, pasuk chavav. And now we get to slow down. And with that money, you're going to buy bechol asher taven afshecha. So you'll buy whatever you want, whatever you desire. And then examples that are given: babakar, uvatzon, uvayain, uvashechar. Four examples that are given. Two types of meat: bakar and son, cow and sheep. Two types of drink, wine and shechar, right? Shechar is either old wine, something intoxicating. Uvechol asher tish'alcha nafshecha, anything that your soul would want. V'achal tosham, you'll eat it there, l'fnei Hashem lokecha. V'samach v'ato v'secha, and everyone will be happy. If the style of the pasuk sounds familiar, so that means you've been learning the daf long enough, you'll know what we're looking at over here is a klal, uprat uklal. So what we have is a generality followed by specific examples, followed then by a generality. And now we're into our classic methodology of how to darshan. And so now as we turn back to the Gemara, now we turn our attention to the Derech HaDrush. So now we're going to see together what is included. So we already can guesstimate that although the Torah gives very specific examples, but this is classic methodology, klal uprat uklal. So it doesn't mean that what you could buy with Ma'aser Sheni are the examples that are listed in the Torah, and that's it. These are just simply examples, and what these examples do is they broadcast to other categories as well. And now it's just a question of how to amplify the examples. So here we go. This, as they say, is classic discussion of how to darshan. So exactly what is the machlokas? We're now in the Gemara, second line before the line, start getting wide towards the bottom, the Amun Chav Zayin and Beis, and we begin. So what is going to be at the Nekudah Machlokas between Rav Yehuda ben Gidish and Rabbi Eliezer? That harkens back to yesterday's daf on the bottom of the Amud Aleph of Chav Zayin, as we already made reference to. They both are of the opinion that you could buy fish with your Ma'aser Sheni money. Yes, they are disagreeing, but they're only disagreeing regarding fish brine, the schmaltz that comes out of the fish. But they both agree that you could buy fish. And meanwhile, we're also going to see Tanaim coming up, and Tanaim coming up say that you can't buy fish with your Ma'aser Sheni money. So what is at the core of the machlokas over here? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Rav Yehuda ben Gedish, Rav Elazar darshi ribuy yemiyute, v'hani tarai darshi klal uprate. So now it's a question of which method are you going to use? Are you going to use the method of klal uprat? Are you going to use the method of ribuy yemiyut? This topic comes up time and again throughout Shas, and now it is a question of what is it going to be the method of Joshua going to be used? Klal uprat versus ribu yumiut, and instead of giving a meta explanation of what they are, let's just see it inside in the Gemara over here, where the Gemara is going to go through what happens when we apply each of the methodologies. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gidish, Rabbi Elazar darshi ribu yumiute. So we're going to start now with those Tanaim who say that the conclusion is you can buy fish. So now let's take a look at the pasuk through the process, through the method of ribu amiyud. So we start off with the generality, but again, we're going to use the word ribui now. So we'll start with the ribui of v'nasata kesev b'chol asher tav nafshecha, that's a ribui. And then babakar v'tzon v'yayin v'shechar miyut. Now, what that does is the following. Before we get to that, let's just identify everything. So what we have over here now is the break of the psukim, and now we're going to apply the method of ribu umiyut. Riba, umiyut, veriba. Riba Hakol. So, in terms of what happens now is that nearly everything gets amplified. My Rabbi, Rabbi Kalmili, we're going to amplify everything on my mute, and what do we minimize? So, the Rabbi Eliezer, miate tzir, the Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, miate mayim umelach. And the only thing now that's going to be excluded is only going to be, according to Rabbi Eliezer of yesterday's daf, it's going to be the brine. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, it's going to be water and salt, but those are the only things that are going to be cut out. Now, just to give this a little bit more teeth, a little bit more explanation, basically when you do the method of Ribu Emiut, so here's what happens. When you're learning through Ribu Emiut, so Ribu Emiut assumes that it includes everything. In other words, when you start off with your generality, your ribui, so that looks to incorporate and include as many things that are listed. Now, as far as the examples that are concerned, they are merely but just examples. Really, what we're looking is for nearly full amplification, full incorporation. What happens is that with ribui miut is that we're only cutting out that which is the most dissimilar. So something like water, something like salt. So those things are cut out, but all the examples that are given in the center are simply there to just be only examples, and the only thing really that is cut out are the things that are most dissimilar. That is the application of Ribu Amiut. So therefore that means to say that obviously of the four examples, fish is really not like the four examples, but nevertheless, fish is something which is a food, something which you desire, and so therefore fish is going to be included as well. Only when you're at the limits of the brine that comes off of a fish, or water, or salt, things that are not nourishing, so they are going to be excluded, but that's it. V'hani tanai dashi klalu prati. Now, as far as the upcoming tanayim, which we haven't seen yet, but we know there are going to be tanayim coming up that are going to tell us that you can't buy fish, so how do they learn it? So, same psukim, same pasuk. Just now, the method not of ribu imiyot, but rather the method of klal uprat. Did Tanya William Tan writes Benasata Kesu Bechal Shir Tam Asher Tave Nafshecha Klal Babakar Uvetzon Vayan Veshecha Prat Uvechol Asher Tishalcha Nafshecha Chazur Klal Klal Uprat Uklal I Atadan Ela Kein Haprat Ma Prat Mefurash Pri Mipri Vegidule Karka Avkol Pri Mipri Vegidule Karka. Okay, so in this methodology of klal uprat uklal, so again, we start with the same identification. It is a generality, followed by specific, followed by generality. It's the same pasuk. It's just that now using the method of klal uprat, now what happens is that the examples now become much more significant because the examples now serve as a prototype. They are the examples that are going to help us define what is included in the generality. And therefore, they must share same characteristics as the examples that are given. Then and only then can they be included in the generality. But if they do not share characteristics of the prototype, they are not going to be included in the generality. So what we need to do is that we need to look at the examples and we need to look at what are the characteristics of the examples. And then once we identify those characteristics, now we can go ahead and we can include. Now, as far as the characteristics are concerned, so what are they? They are basically animals and produce. What can we say regarding animals and produce? So the Gemara over here identifies two characteristics. One is pre-mi-pre, they reproduce, right? Fruit obviously reproduce, grapes reproduce. You take the seed, you plant it again, they reproduce. Animals reproduce. So one characteristic is reproduction, and the other one is gidule karka. The fact that they grow from the ground. Now, as far as the fruit are concerned, the vine and the grapes growing from the ground, that's self-evident. How do we say that animals grow from the ground? So that is a little bit tricky, but Rashi over here writes, you can see the Rashi, five lines from the bottom, Gidule Karka, Shikulam Nizonim Vigidalim Mina Karka. The animal obviously is a herbivore, getting its nourishment from the ground, and so therefore it grows from the ground, meaning it nourishes from the ground. So, and obviously, the grapes are self-evident. So now that we have the characteristics, in order for something to be included in this category, where it's now eligible that I could buy it with my Meister Sheni money, so it must share these characteristics. And that's exactly the Gemara's point. Av kol, primi, privi, gedule karka. So anything which is primi, pri, and gedule karka is going to be included. Fine. That is now how we get to the conclusion. How we get to the conclusion that that it's going to obviously be much more limiting than the ribui miut because it must share characteristics. Now, is that going to include fish? So stay tuned in just a moment. We're going to clarify that. V'tanya idach mahaprat meforsh vlad vlados haaretz avkol vlad vlados haaretz. Now, in another brisa, it is nearly identical, but this brisa concludes by shaping the characteristics slightly different. Just like the prat, the examples are vlad vlados haaretz. They're actually coming from the ground. Not nourishing from the ground, but coming from the ground. Stay tuned. We're going to explain what that means in just a moment. So, avkol vlad vlados haaretz. So, therefore, anything else by extension, it has to be coming from the ground. Okay, so, in the klal uprat klal, we now have a better understanding of what the difference is between klal uprat klal versus ribui miut in terms of how to learn our particular klal uprat klal. So, we have two brisas in terms of what are the defining characteristics of the examples that are given. They are both primi-pri. In other words, they reproduce, that's clear, all the examples. And then what's the second one? So we have two brises with two slightly different versions. In brisa number one, we talk about how it nourishes from the ground. In brisa number two, we talk about how it derives from the ground. Now, my beinayu, what's the difference between the two ways to say it over? So I'm Rabbi Dagami Ika beinayu. So at the core of difference over here is going to be fish. And Abai goes on to explain. So if you're saying that it reproduces and it nourishes from the ground, so fish are included. Fish obviously reproduce, and on top of that, fish nourish from the ground as well. When we say ground, we just simply mean from something that grows from the ground. It happens to be that the fish are getting their nourishment from algae, or in other words, growth that comes from the bed of the ocean. Or the bed of the lake. So therefore, it is primi-pri and it's gidule karka, it nourishes from the ground. However, but if the characteristics are, number one, it reproduces, and number two, it generates from the ground, it was created in the ground, well, where were fish created? So we have to go back to Maisa Bereishis, and we have to look at the description that's given to fish in terms of where it was created. In Maisa Bereishis, the humans were created from the ground. Animals were created from the ground. Fish were created from the water. Since fish were created from the water, so therefore they are not going to be included in the klal uprat klal. So the Gemara now points out that even within the klal uprat klal, now it will come out that depending on how you learn the characteristics and the shared characteristics of the four examples of the Torah, so it will either include or exclude fish depending on how you shape the characteristics. To which the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Umi amar abai dagim gidule karka ninhu. So we're making the argument that dagim are considered gidule karka, they nourish on the ground. V'amar abai, the Gemara says, but consider now the following. And that is, Abai made another statement, and this takes us to Masechta Makos, third parak, in which if a person were to eat a sheretz, so he'd be violating multiple isurim for eating a sheretz. Now, in terms of shratzim, the definition of shratzim, a great Rashi right here in our daf. We're on Chav Ches Amud Aleph, we're on the top of the Amud. And if you want to just see a great Rashi defining a sheretz, because I always struggle giving English definition to the word sheretz, there is no good English definition to sheretz. I end up saying creepy crawly, I'm sure. It's an art school definition. It's basically, it's hard to work with in terms of giving a good, we don't have a category in English that describes it. Anyway, take a look at Rashi over here, Sheretz. The Rashi you're going to find is going to be about a third of the way down. There is no Dibur HaMazkal. Rashi is starting after the, at the beginning of the line. Sheretz Lashon, Sheretz Davar Shehu Nad Ba'aretz. As far as sheretz is concerned, it's something that moves on the ground. Ve'eino nireh. Now, Rashi describes it as it being not apparent. I think what Rashi is describing over here, obviously you could see it. If you can't see it, then there's not much to talk about. But ve'eino nireh, it would seem to indicate that you can't really see it walking. meaning its legs are not that long. Basically, what it does is it crawls around. I know, it comes out that according to Rashi, it's a creepy, crawly item. But anyway, the sheretz, however, is something that basically crawls on the ground and you can't really tell, you can't really see how it's doing so. It crawls, it slithers. Shratzim, okay, anything which is really low to the ground. Anyway, in terms of the consumption of a sheretz, eating of a sheretz, so one is going to be in violation of multiple lavim. In terms of categorizing shratzim, so really shratzim exist in one of four categories. One category of sheretz is sheretz hamayim, something that is in the water. Another, obviously not a fish, meaning not something that is kosher to eat, which would have fins and scales, but any other aquatic small little animal, so that is sheretz hamayim. Then on top of that, there's also sheretz haaretz, anything which is on the land. And then on top of that, there's also sheretz hashamayim, something that flies, like a bee, a wasp, etc., etc. If one were to eat any of these types of shratzim, one is going to be subject to malchus, actually multiple malchus. And the statement of Abai, which is made in the Gemara Malchus, which the Gemara over here is quoting, Achol petisa loka arba. If one were to eat the sherets of water, that's four sets of malchus, four lavin. Go through the Rashi inside. I'm not going to do it right now. Rashi goes through the various psukim. A nemala, if one were to eat a nemala, that is a sherets of the land. Modern Hebrew translates that as an ant. Not sure over here if that's what's being described, but anyway. Loka chamesh, one is going to be subject to five sets of malchus. Again, look at Rashi over here, which we're not going to go through. Rashi goes through the Pesukim. Tzira. By the way, just if I could summarize Rashi, there are two Pesukim that are generic, that apply to all Shratzim. There are two Lavim that are generic, that apply to all Shratzim. And then, just a question of specific Pesukim that talk about Shratzim of the water, of the land, and of the air, of the sky. And Tzira. And then, in terms of eating the sherets of the sky, something that flies, lokeshesh, one is going to be subject to six sets of malchus. Okay, so this is Abai's organization of the various malchus that one will receive for eating shratzim, depending on whether it comes from the water, from the earth, or the one that flies in the air. Now, in Isa, here now the Gemara constructs its question, and that is, let us now take into consideration, if fish are something which gets its nourishment from the ground, so patisa nami loke mishum sheretz hasharetz al haaretz. So then even the water sheretz should fall under the category of sheretz hasharetz al haaretz, and therefore you should be receiving the extra set of malchus for eating the sheretz of the mayim, because it does nourish from the ground. So the Gemara says, el amar ravina ofos ikamenel. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, fine. So as far as we're concerned, it is not, we can't take the klal uprat methodology, and we can't generate fish from there. So although as much as the Gemara wanted to take fish and put that as the difference, as the nafkamina, between the two different ways we're going to say the klal uprat, the Gemara acknowledges, at least within Abaye, it will be something that we cannot do. So the Gemara now is going to go over a new approach. Again, let's just organize our daf today, because really, it's a lot of information. We started off our discussion regarding noting that there are machlokas tanaim, whether you could take your kesef meiser, sheni, and you could purchase fish with it. Tanaim of yesterday's daf said you can. Tanaim of today's daf says you cannot. And the Gemara now wants to know, what is at the source of this machlokas? So, the easiest way to say it is whether or not I take that pasuk and parshas re'eh, darshan it through ribu yomiyut, if we do. So basically, we've incorporated every type of food, including fish. And the only thing that gets cut off are the things that are most dissimilar, which is either the brine or it's going to be salt and water. As opposed to when learning klal uprat meaning to say that the only things you could buy are things that share characteristics. Fish do not share characteristics, and therefore fish cannot be purchased. That's the easiest way to say it. But then the Gemara, at least Abaye, wanted to even fine-tune this a little bit better, that even within the klal uprat, one could make a difference between the two different versions of how the klal uprat was presented. In one version, we looked at the shared characteristics as being, these are items, the four items listed in the Torah are reproducing and they nourish from the ground, that would include fish, as opposed to the second brisa that says that the shared characteristics are reproduction and the fact that they have been born from the ground. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created from the ground, which would not include fish. That's what Abai wanted to suggest. The Gemara only dismissed it because ultimately fish are not receiving its nourishment from the ground. Otherwise, you would have received an extra set of malchus for eating the putisa. Okay, so that was just a quick summary of the entire sugya we did up until now. The Gemara now is going to go over a different approach in terms of the subtle differences between the two different ways to say the klal uprat. Ela amaravina ofos ika bainau. The actual difference is going to be birds. Laman dama prima priva gidule karka. So hani nami gidule karka ninu. So if you're saying the characteristics as being reproduction and they derive their nourishment from the ground, great. That's birds. You just described birds as well. But if you're saying that they were generated from the ground, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them from the ground, only those things can be, I could purchase with my Meister Sheni money. So, Hani Ofos, Min Harakak Nivru. When it comes to birds, birds were not created from the ground. Birds were created from mud. Meaning, we know the fish was created from water. We know the animals were created from the land. What about birds? Birds are a hybrid. Birds were created from a combination of water and land, otherwise known as rakak, otherwise known as mud. This Gemara, the Gemara over here, is mentioning that birds were created from mud. So we have a similar pasuk also, I'm sorry, we have a similar Gemara in Chulin that speaks of this idea as well. In fact, the idea that birds are a hybrid, somewhere existing between animals and fish in terms of how they're generated, so it may explain the following halacha. Okay, it's not tam ha-mitzvah, but it certainly may help us understand the mitzvah a little bit more. And that is that when you shecht a bird, so you don't have to shecht both simanim. When you shecht an animal, you have to shecht two simanim, both the trachea and the windpipe. Both the trachea and the esophagus. When shechting a fish, there is no requirement to shecht a fish, meaning you just simply take it out of the water, allow it to die, and then you eat the fish. And so what about birds? So birds are a hybrid, meaning that birds are really generated. They were formed by both earth and water. And so therefore, they're somewhere in the middle between animals and fish. And so therefore, they do require shechita, but only one siman, not both simanim. Okay, that's the Gemara in Chulin speaking to this idea. Anyway, what comes out now is that birds may be a nafkamina. So mandem arbi ofos my time. Now, umandem mimet ofos my time. Okay, now, in terms of including birds or in terms of excluding birds, the Gemara is going to basically attack the same issue, but in a slightly different format. Meaning that what we're going to do over here is that we're going to learn that klal uprat uklal, right? We're going to focus on that methodology, but even within that methodology, there really are going to be two different ways to say it over, and either in the two different ways we're going to say it over is going to now affect whether or not we are going to include or exclude birds. Manda marbi ofus kasavar. Now the one who says that birds should be included, so he's going to say as follows: klal basra dafka, prat uklal nasa klal mosif al ha prat. The isra beluhu kamile v'ani klal kamal meute kol delodamile mishneitzadim. So basically, we're going to say like as follows. The klal basra is dafka. Okay, meaning, let's take a step backwards. Whenever we have a klal uprat uklal, what are we looking at? So it's interesting. What we're looking at is there are two different ways to look at it. We could say that what we're looking at is a klal uprat, followed then by a klal. Another way we could look at it is that it's a prat uklal, which is introduced with a klal. Okay, if you're following me. And that means to say that that really, when we're looking at a klal uprat uklal, what is it at its essence? Is it essentially a klal uprat with then a klal attached afterwards? Or is it a prat uklal with a klal that was introducing it? Now, if it sounds like semantics, actually, it turns into a big difference. Because let's see what it is at its core. What is a klal uprat? A klal uprat is ein shebeklal elamash beprat. If the Torah only introduces a generality followed by specific, So then the only thing that's included is the specific example. If we're looking at a prat uklal, so then it is the entire generality. Prat only being an example, but it's the entire generality. If we're now we're looking at a klal prat uklal, and we're trying to distill it to see what it is in its essence, so actually it's going to really be significant in terms of what it essentially is. If it's essentially klal prat, so that really means to say that our starting point is it can only be the specific, and then the second klal is going to amplify it, but only starting from the specific. If we're saying that essentially it's prat uklal, so that means to say that at its essence we're really looking to amplify, and the first klal is there to just simply shape the amplification. Okay, hopefully everything over there was really clear. That's what the Gemara is now going to do in terms of looking at this klal or prat uklal, but really it is a larger discussion of how to really shape and look at a klal or prat uklal, and now we're going to look at it through the lens of our discussion over here. And let me start the Gemara again. Man demar bi ofos my taima, man demamai ofos my taima. So man demar bi ofos kasavar klal basra dafka. So as far as the two klalim are concerned, the second klal is dafka. Prat uklal nasa klal mosif al haprat. So really what I'm looking at over here is the prat uklal, which really means that our starting point is a point of generalization. And now what's the first klal coming to do? Just shaping the amplification. V'yisrabalu kol mi'ile. Really our starting point is that we're looking to include. V'ahanu klal kamal ma'ute. And the only first klal is there to just provide a niyut. It's just to provide a miut. And that miut that it's providing is what? Called the lodamile mishnei tzadim. If it's dissimilar in two aspects, so then if it's dissimilar in two aspects, so then it's going to be excluded. Sorry. Mashen kein. Mandem mem ayit ofas kasavar. Now, if you're excluding birds, so then what are you saying? Klal kama dafka, that the first klal is really dafka. Klal prat in the in bechlal alamash prat. Meaning, what is klal prat uklal at its core? At its core, it's klal prat, which means to say that really what the starting point is a point of limitation. It's only the example. And hani in midach rinilo. That's the starting point. The ahani klal abasra leribui called the damilei mishloshet tzadim. And what is coming now and happening is that the second klal is coming to now in order to now mimic, we have to be attached at 3 points. And now, in terms of what the points are, 1 point, 2 points versus 3 points, so basically it's what we discussed up until now, but basically we're now collecting all the points together. Point number one is that it is primipri. It is reproduction. Point number two, it's nizon menakarka, it nourishes from the ground. Point number three is that it is generated from the ground. So if I'm learning that really at its core, it's klal uprat, so that means to say that we're starting from a point of limitation, of exclusion, and then we're coming to include. But since we're starting at the point of exclusion, so therefore, in order for it to qualify, it's got to match on all 3 points. If we're starting from prat uklal, which really means that we're starting from a point of inclusion, and then we're just shaping it a little bit in terms of what we're including, so it only has to match on 2 points. Hopefully all that was clear. That is the Gemara's presentation in terms of how we can learn out these principles from the standpoint of whether or not birds should or should not be included. Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmei Derashmo Barshilas Mishmei Derav. And now, And so now, what the Gemara is going to be doing for the remainder of today's daf is that the Gemara is going to be having a extraordinarily technical discussion regarding certain types of produce which are on the border of edible or inedible, and whether or not they could be used for foods. Okay. And let's begin. Let's begin the Gemara. Amar Avinu Mishmei Derav Shmuel Bar Shilas Mishmei Derav. Arvin be paapuin uvechag legos uveche good ganios avalo bechaziz velo bechafnios. So in terms of making an Erev Tchum, and presumably also Meister Shini as well, but let's assume that we're going back to the topic of Erev Tchum and the various foods that could be used for Erev Tchum. So you could use three foods. Now, in terms of the definition of the three foods, so I can give you a definition, although quite frankly, it's not going to help so much in terms of what they are, but it's not going to help me, I should say. But basically, these are different types of produce which are somewhat edible, they can be used. But chaziz and kafnios are, even though they're produce, they are perfectly inedible. Let's call them inedible, and therefore they cannot be used for your erev tchum. Okay, good ganios mimarvin. So we're going to start now with good ganios. Okay, English translation is coriander. Okay, coriander happens to be, I know what it is. But the Gemara now says that the good ganios fall under the category of something that you can make an erev tchum with. And the Gemara says, is that in fact so? That time you will learn the following price of good ganios merube banim yochlu chasuche banim lo yochlu. If you have a lot of children, so go ahead and enjoy coriander. If you don't have a lot of children, so don't eat coriander. It's obvious from the Braisa that coriander is a food that is not going to help out reproduction. It somehow is going to, the Gemara doesn't be specific, it somehow diminishes a man's ability to reproduce. The mukshal is erfa af merube banim lo yochlu. Now, if the coriander becomes so hard, meaning in its ripening it becomes so hard, so then even if you have a lot of children, you shouldn't be eating it because it's just simply not good for one's health. So tirgamash lo hukshal zera. So over here, so the Gemara thinks now we have a problem because over here it's now pretty clear that you shouldn't be eating coriander altogether. But the Gemara says that's fine because over here what Rav was describing was coriander being used for erev tchum when it is not overripened and it's not hardened. Merube banim. The Gemara says that vis-a-vis merube banim. Merube banim. And who could use this for erev tchum? So only somebody who has a lot of children. Meaning, so it is edible, and the person himself is somebody who, even though it's going to diminish his ability to have children, not a big deal. Ibai Sam of the Gemara says, or we could say like this, and that is the olam lechashuche banim. No, it's even for somebody who does not have a lot of children, but meanwhile, the ha-chazon le-merube banim. Nevertheless, coriander can be eaten by others, and milo tanam ma'arvin le-nazir mi-yayin le-yisrael b'truma, and isn't that point already been established in our first Mishnah, here in the third parak, where if I have something that cannot be eaten by the principal himself, nevertheless, as long as others can eat it, so therefore it is eligible to be used for erev tchum. Same thing over here. Ama afagav de lo chazi lahai, chazi lahai. So hachanami afagav de lo chazi lahai, chazi lahai. The by same of the Gemara gives the third approach, which is kika amar rav bihindakuke madai. Or maybe we're talking about a specific type of species. The Gemara describes the coriander that comes from madai, presumably very edible, not something that is going to be at all damaging. Okay, anyway, that takes care of coriander for today. We move on to the next topic, chaziz. Uve chaziz lo. Now, when it comes to the green grain, so we said that it is something that cannot be used for erev tchum, and the Gemara discusses this as well. The Amar of Yuna Marav Kishos v'Chaziz Ma'arvin behem Ma'arvin Aleim. Sorry, Umevarchin Aleim Bor Pri Adama. As far as the Chaziz is concerned, so you can make an erev with them, and on top of that, you also make a bracha, and the bracha is going to be Bor Pri Adama, grows from the ground. What comes out over here is that this statement of Rav is the exact opposite of the previous, where you could use it for erev tchum, and furthermore, which bracha to make on it? So the Gemara says, "Lokashi amikamidasi rav lebavel." and halabasar da'asir rav labavel. So the Gemara says the difference over here is before or after Rav comes to Bavel. And to explain this a little bit better, so let's go over a little bit of a history of Rav that we've gone over numerous times. Rav was a student of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. His uncle was Rabbi Chia. He started off in Eretz Yisrael learning with Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. For reasons which I don't think the Gemara ever gives, Rav goes in and leaves Eretz Yisrael and goes to Bavel. Makes a residence in Bavel, becomes a Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel, and becomes the head of the Yeshiva in Sura. Shmuel is in Harda, Rav is in Sura. Anyway, and he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva, and is a little bit taken back by some of the Menhagim in Bavel, not only in terms of halacha, but even in terms of eating as well. Okay, so a slight halachic differences between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, slight cultural differences between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, and so, okay, and Rav adopted. And so over here, in Eretz Yisrael, they would never consider eating the chaziz, eating this green grain. Meanwhile, when he got to Bavel, so they loved it. So before Rav came to Eretz Yisrael, so no, you can't use it for Erev Tchum because nobody here in Eretz Yisrael eats it. But then when he gets to Bavel and he sees everybody eating it, okay, fine, you could use it for your Erev Tchum. Furthermore, I'll tell you what bracha to make on Nebor Pir Adama. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. Uvavel havye ruba da'ama. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So just because a segment of the population goes ahead and eats the chaziz, that all of a sudden is going to give it a status of being a food? So they are but a minority. And the Hatanya we learned in a brisa, ha'pul v'ha'sa'or v'ha'tilsin shizaran li yerek, that if I have these types of beans or barleys, and I planted it for its vegetation, meaning that what the planter wanted was to eat the vegetable part of it, so then, that's strange, that's weird, that's not why people are eating it, people are not eating it for its vegetation, people are eating it for its seed. So, the seeds are going to be chayv and shumas amaisros, but the vegetation part of it is not going to be chayv because nobody eats that. However, when it comes to shichlaim v'gargir, shazan liyarek, so when it comes to cress and gargir, whatever that may be, where you were zoreya li yarek, so then it's asrin yarek vizera. So there it's planted for both its vegetation and its seed. So zarin lezera mit asrin zera viyarek. So then when you plant it, regardless of what you're planting it for, so you're going to take off shumas amaisos for both the seed and the vegetation part of it, the leafy part of it as well. So, what comes out over here is as follows. We don't understand that when Rav says that the chaziz can be used, so it's because he went to Bavel and he discovered in Bavel they eat it. So what they eat in Bavel? Bavel only represents a minority. Ki kamar Rav, so the Gemara says, as far as Rav is concerned, bidiguniyasa. So we're talking about a certain type of variety. And a certain type of variety which is edible and is eaten throughout the world, that's what Rav was describing. So Zera Gargir Lamai Chazi, so the Gemara now is going to stay on this tangent for just a moment. Now as far as Zera Gargir is concerned, what good is Zera Gargir? Amar Rav Yochanan Shekol Rishonim Shelo Hayalahem Pilpulin. I'm sorry, Shekain Rishonim Shelo Hayalahem Pilpulin. So Rav Yochanan gives an explanation that people who lived in earlier periods of time, so they didn't have pepper. So Shokhin Osom Matvilam Boatsatzli. So what they would do is that they would take the seed of the gargir, they would grind it up, and that's what they use instead of pepper. Okay, Adkan. We discussed for a moment the bracha that you make on the chaziz. The Gemara is going to be spending a little bit more time discussing the bracha that you make on chaziz. Rabbi Zera ki avichalosh migirsei. Rabbi Zera was sick, and sorry, not sick, but Rabbi Zera got tired. Right. Normally comes along together with sick. But Rabbi Zera was tired, and he was learning, and he just needed a break. So Ava Azav Yosef Apischa de Rabbi Yehuda Barami, and what he wanted to do was maximize the usage of his time. And despite the fact that he wasn't currently learning, but he figured, look, I'm not learning, but let me get schar. What I'll do is I'll stand by the entrance. Amr Kinafki Va'ayla Rabbanim, when the Chachamim come into the base of Midrash, when they leave the base of Midrash, Eka Mekamai Ve'kaba Be'ug Igra. So what I'll do is I'll stand up for them, and I will get schar for giving cover to Tamidei Chachamim when I myself am exhausted of learning, so at least I'll do something that will give me schar anyway. Nafak Asa Yunuka Debei Rav. he saw a yeshiva boy. Amarle, my agmerach rabach, what did you learn today? So Amarle, kishos bari pri adama. So he says that as far as kishos is concerned, which is the hops, which we just described, so he said the brach is bari pri adama. And chaziz, now as far as this green grain is concerned, shakon liyebed vero, the correct brach is shakon liyebed vero. Now the green grain, okay, again, not exactly sure what it is, but doesn't matter. The green grain is something which is not fully mature. Okay, and that would be a good indication as to why it's green. So it's not fully mature. And we go back to the sixth parak of brachos, and we learn back in the sixth parak of brachos that as far as the brachos of bari pri eitz and bari pri adama, so that bracha is only appropriate when you're dealing with produce that is fully mature. So what this boy learned in yeshiva is that the green grain, despite the fact that it is a grain, but nevertheless, because of its lack of maturity, so therefore the bracha is shakal, not bari pri adama. So Amarle, so Rebbe Zera heard this. Rebbe Zera said, I'll tell you what, I disagree. Now it's great because Rebbe Zera was there to take a break from learning. And he couldn't help himself. Meaning, okay, I'll take a break from learning, but he said something. I don't think he's right. Okay, so much for his break from learning. So Amarle, Adra, Abibcha Mistabra, it seems that the opposite is true. So Hai Ma'ara Kamarbe, what are you talking about? It's coming from the ground. V'hai me'avir kemarbe, and this one is coming from the air, meaning that as far as the green grain is concerned, its nourishment is coming from the ground. As far as the hops are concerned, so its nourishment is coming from the air, meaning he thought it to be more of something like a fungus. So v'hilchus ha'kinukat de beirav, now the Gemara says, now, as far as the accepted halach is concerned, we're going to follow the yeshiva boy, meaning, I say the yeshiva boy, I mean what his Rebbe told him. So my taima, hai gemar pri, v'hai lav gemar pri. Because really, at what is the critical issue over here is whether or not we're looking at a finished product. When we're talking about the chaziz, the finished product, it's fully developed, it's fully ripened, and therefore, it's going to, the bracha is going to be bari pri adama. When it comes to the hops, it's a finished product, it's bari pri adama. When it comes to the green grain, it's unfinished, it's unripened, therefore shahako. Umay de kamart karabi, hami ari karabi, v'hai ma'avir karabi. Now, as far as your point, as the green grain being a bit of a fungus, lohi, the Gemara says it's not true. So kishos, I'm sorry, as far as the hops being a fungus, it's not true. Lohi kishos nami ma'ari karabi. No, the hops really gets its nourishment from the ground. De haka chazinan, de kadlina lehiz masa. So the shrubs where the hops grow, you cut the shrubs, and the hops dies. So it's clearly something which nourishes from the ground. And so this distinction that Rebbe Zera said, Rebbe Zera wanted to call the hops something that is more like fungi. It's the Gemara says it's simply inaccurate. Okay. One more discussion for today, and that is the kafnios. We go back to the statement that was said on Chav Chesem and Aleph, right in the middle of the Yamun after the two dots. Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, in the name of Rav, said that there are three types of produce that are inedible, and therefore you cannot use your Erev Tchum, and two types of produce which are edible, and you could use your Erev Tchum. And so far we have discussed with some detail the third of the inedibles, and now we're discussing two of the edibles. The good gadnios, sorry for just butchering pronunciation. The things I'm not familiar with. Anyway, so that the Gemara discussed in detail. We just got done discussing the chaziz in detail, and now we're going to be discussing the kafnios. Kafnios ein ma'arvin. You don't make an erev tchum with the kafnios. The Gemara says, is that true? Va'atanya korni kach bekesav meiser. As far as hard of palm, you could purchase your kesav meiser and you could buy hard of palm with it. Ve'im etam tumas oklin. However, it's not subject to tumas oklin, which puts hard of palm in a funny category, meaning it qualifies as a food that I can go ahead and make a purchase with it using my meiser sheni money, but not subject to tumas oklin because it's not really a food. So it's somewhere in limbo in terms of whether it is or is not a food. Now, as far as kafnios are concerned, you could purchase it with meiser sheni money and subject to tumas oklin. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kor HaRehu Ke'etz L'Chol Dvarav. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says, as far as hard of palm is concerned, it's wood. El Shenikach Mekesav Meiser, but you can purchase it with meiser sheni money. Now, it certainly sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is making the exact same point as the Tanakama. Hold that thought. We're coming back to that. Now, as far as kafnios are concerned, so it's a fruit in every aspect of the word. It just happens to be that they're going to be exempt from meiser because they are not fully developed, they are not fully grown. So, the as far as the brice is concerned, when you have a date that has not reached full maturity yet, that's the kafnios. So, vis-a-vis tuma, it's considered a food. And they should be able to be used vis-a-vis an Erev. And the Gemara says, now if you go back to what we learned on the Amud Aleph, so on the Amud Aleph, we describe the kafnios, as something that you can't make. I'm sorry, by the way. The first three are things that you can make, and the last two are things that you can't make an Erev Tchum with. And so now, okay, now I see where my confusion is. Okay, so on the list, we start off by saying kafnios are unripened dates, and you can't make an Erev Tchum, and now we just established that you can make. So the Gemara says, Ha'aslam b'din ischane. So the Gemara says, okay, as far as the Brisa was concerned, the Brisa was referring to this is Rashi's explanation, a male palm tree, and their fruits never mature. And so therefore, whenever you have the date that comes off of it, it is in perpetuity going to be never fully ripened. So So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then I don't understand how Rabbi Yehuda gives an exemption from Meiser. As far as the dates of Bichoni were also, they are considered non-ripe. So, as far as Meiser is concerned, they're in fact chayav and Meiser. So, the basic idea is that when you have a date, and that date has never arrived at the point of full maturity, and it never will reach full maturity, so then they are considered done, and therefore they're chayav and chumas and Meisros. So, elala olam lav bi nischani. So, the Gemara says, okay. So, the Brisa was not talking about the male palm tree, with these unripened dates, because if they are never to ripen, so that means to say that they're going to be chayv and chumas and maizos. Ul'inyan tuma ochlin shani. Now, as far as tumas ochlin is concerned, it's going to be different. Kedama Rav Yochanan, hovirai lamatkan ayidei ha'or. And as far as tumas ochlin is concerned, look, these dates, if you roast them, if you grill them, they're going to become sweetened, and so therefore, they could be rendered edible. So the same thing is true over here. As long as they can be rendered edible, so therefore, the reason why they're not currently tamei tumas ochlin, but they will be tamei tumas ochlin, is because they can be rendered edible. You roast them, they can be made sweeter, and therefore they are at the point of further, they can be further developed, further edible. Okay, and now going all the way back to Eruv and Rav's original statement, since it is not currently edible, so therefore you cannot use it for Eruv Tchum, and that's where we land in terms of this item vis-a-vis Eruv Tchum. Finishing up, Rav Yochanan Ahad Italian. Now Rav Yochanan's statement about roasting it, making it sweeter, it was said on the following. As far as bitter almonds are concerned, ketanim chayavim, if they are small and they're not fully grown, so they're subject to trumas maestros. And gedolim, however, if they're large, they're going to be pturim, they're going to be exempt. So they are extraordinarily bitter. They're not considered a food. And misukim, as far as sweet almonds are concerned, so we're going to go now into the reverse. Gedolim chayavim, ketanim pturim. When they're large and fully developed and edible and sweet, so then they're chayav. When they're small and immature, so then they're going to be putter. Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, Amar Mishum Aviv. Rabbi Shimon quotes his father, Rabbi Yossi, and Zevezel Liftur. He says that both the both sizes of bitter almonds are going to be putter, and the Amrila Zevezel Lichiyuv. And in another version, both are going to be chayav. And Amar Rabbi Eli, Ho Rabbi Chananya B'tzipori, K'divrei Amar Zevezel Liftur. Now, as far as the ruling is concerned, because there is a range of positions, so it was paskin by Rabbi Chanina that it's going to be exempt, that the almonds are going to be exempt. Now, if you're going to make the argument that vis-a-vis the position that they're always going to be chayiv, how can they always be chayiv? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, hold the right, lamaskan ayideh, or because what you could do is that you could roast them. Roasting them is going to sweeten them, and that is how they could be rendered. They can be rendered edible. Okay, this will be our stopping point for this morning. Amar Mar, Heart of Palm. We'll come back to the Heart of Palm discussion at the beginning of tomorrow's daf, and let us quickly recap. Okay, we started off our morning by going through methodology, right? Admittedly difficult Gemara, but very basic Gemara in terms of what is going to be proper, the proper method of darshaning. When you have a generality followed by a specific, followed by a generality, so it falls under the category of klal prado klal, and there are two schools of thought. One is that you go klal prado klal. That, of course, is the one we're more used to. That is Shitas Rabbi Shmuel, as introduced in the Brice of Rabbi Shmuel, which is the introduction to the Sifra, which we say every morning right before Pesukah de Zimra. That is one way to do it. The other way to do it is klal prat. Klal prat, which the Gemara over here does not give attribution in terms of who subscribes to the school of klal prat, but that is another way to darshan. And the Gemara says is that over here in our discussion regarding what could be purchased with Maaser Sheni money, the Torah gives four examples of behema, of bakar tzon, yain v'shechar. So of the four examples, now what do we do with those examples? If I use ribui umiut, so basically they're not even examples. It really includes all foods. It just happens to be that a food that is most dissimilar to the examples are going to be excluded, but everything else is going to be included. Water, salt, fish brine maybe. So those will be excluded, but everything else will also be included. However, if we're going to be using the method of klal uprat uklal, which is the method of Rabbi Shmuel, so there now we have to be much more specific in that. We're now looking at the examples as prototypes. We now have to take out the common characteristics of those examples, and only things that share common characteristics are going to be used. But in the course of today's daf, what we also learn together is in terms of extracting common characteristics, that's also not so easy. So here in this particular example, so what are common characteristics? So the examples are reproductive in nature, and on top of that, they also nourish from the ground, and on top of that, they also are grown from the ground. They were originally created from the ground. So those are common characteristics. Which of those become the key characteristics? So that was another part of this morning's discussion. Furthermore, we're not done yet. One more point. Furthermore, when looking at klal uprat uklal, what is it at its core? At its core, is it really klal uprat with then a klal afterwards? Which means that at its core, really what we're starting from is a point of limitation. Or no, at its core, it's really prat uklal, and then we're just adding a klal in the beginning in order to shape it. But really, we're starting from the point of amplification. So the Gemara points out that that is another sub-discussion to be had regarding klal uprat. That was the first half of today's daf. I'd say technical, but really very fundamental in terms of methods of darshaning. The next part of today's daf, I'll say, is extraordinarily technical. As the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav, that there are three types of produce that you can make for Erev Tchum, the Pa'apuin, the Chaglugos, and the Gudganios, so that's those you could, in fact, use for your Erev Tchum, meaning those are edible produce, but Chaziz and Kafnios, which are inedible produce, you cannot be using for your Erev Tchum. And what the Gemara spent the remaining portion of today's daf discussing is that when it comes to Gudganios, the coriander, so the Gemara had much to say in terms of It induces a little bit of sterility in terms of whether or not it's at all beneficial to eat. And the idea that Rav says you can use it, and how to resolve that. The Gemara then spent a lot of time with the chaziz, where Rav was quoted as saying that you can't use chaziz. Meanwhile, in a different place, Rav said you can use it. When Rav made his big move from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So he saw that in Bavel they were eating the chaziz. He therefore himself changed his tune. The Gemara wants to know, okay, so in Bavel they're eating chaziz. Aren't they just simply a minority of the world population who do not eat chaziz? And when does a minority going to help us define what is and what isn't something considered normal behavior? To which the Gemara says, okay, we're talking about a different type of chaziz, and so it's a different subspecies, okay? And then The Gemara spent a little bit more time discussing chaziz in terms of edibility, in terms of bracha, and then the final discussion we had this morning was kafnios. Kafnios are unripened dates, so Rav was quoted saying that you cannot use that. The Gemara notes that we have a brisa that says that you are, in fact, going to be eating unripened dates. In fact, it's chayv and shumas and maestros, a discussion of whether it's subject to tumas ochlin, but it's certainly something which is edible, and the Gemara had to resolve that stira between the brisa and the statement of Rav.